The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
We were speaking earlier in the show about the fertility industry, about sperm and egg donation, about freezing, about co-parenting, about surrogacy. We had a really interesting debate between David Quinn and Annette Hickey, a solicitor working in this area, which you can listen back to in the News Talk app. But I'm delighted to say now that Louise McLaughlin is on the line. Louise, I understand you were donor conceived. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I was donor conceived back in London in 1991. And I had no idea until I was 13. And then my parents, actually against guidance that they were kind of given at the time, sat me down and told me that, yeah, actually, I had been conceived with the help of a sperm donor. And the wonderful dad who raised me might not actually be my biological father.
Can you, if it's possible, Louise, take us back to that moment? Like, how does a 13-year-old process that?
I don't know if they do. It was very difficult. It was very confusing. I think it's the age where you're just trying to figure out your identity and who you are, and you're kind of quite cemented into your family unit, but also you're quite turbulent at that age too. It threw everything for a very long time. And I remember, the conversation was obviously quite difficult for everyone involved. It was a shock to me. But it was difficult for my parents to have it with me. And I remember them being upset. And I think, as a child, it's difficult to see your parents kind of visibly upset. So I left that conversation with a kind of knowledge of, oh, wow, this is a topic that is clearly upsetting. Let's not bring this up again. And it was at a time when IVF wasn't really commonplace. So yeah, it was just something that was spoken about once and then not really spoken about again. And that stigma, I definitely felt that back at that time.
So, because I was going to ask, in the conversations you had afterwards, did they explain to you why they decided not to tell you earlier, or why they decided to tell you then?
The medical community told them never tell. Which we now know. I mean, I'm a journalist. I cover this. Obviously, I have a special interest in the topic. So I speak to lots of donor-conceived people now. And the guidance is tell them straight away. Always tell them from day one. Tell them when they're in the womb. Tell them every day as they grow up in the most age-appropriate way. But obviously, when we were quite early on in the stages of this, the medical community didn't know what they were doing. They knew that scientifically they could create children, but children grow into adults and adults deserve the truth. And there was no thought really about, well, do we tell them? And also they thought they could get away with it. So you have to realize, back when I was conceived around 29 years ago, DNA testing was just not a thing. All these donors just thought they'd never be found.
Okay, so I suppose it's important to reiterate that, like, your parents were following what were the guidelines, certainly up for the first 13 years, which was just say nothing.
Exactly. And only in the last, decade, or maybe the last five years, has that guidance and that conversation really changed. And that's why I think it's so important. And that's why, I'm doing a podcast at the moment. It's called You Look Like Me. And it's to give voices to people who are donor conceived, because these voices were just not considered. Like I said, the medical community was leading the way and kind of writing their own legislation for this as they went. But they were the ones making money off the back of this. You can't have people who are making the money the same people who are kind of making up the rules as they go along. Yeah. So it's so important to get these donor conceived voices in and go, actually, I deserve the truth. I deserve to know where I come from day one. I deserve. And also, half of this is just about medical history as well. Obviously, it's great to know who both your parents are. But we know, modern family, that's not, there's many forms that a modern family can take. But it does just sometimes come down to medical history and knowing you have other siblings out there who are running in the same circles in the same location and are the same age as you.
Did it affect your relationship with your parents, with your dad in particular?
I think now it has made it so much stronger.
Right.
At the time, and look, I talk to people who are donor conceived, and you do see these themes again and again. when you find out later in life, you do have those feelings of betrayal and confusion and a feeling of, oh, wow, everyone knew the secret about me and I didn't know it. And so many people report that. And that is why if you lean into, you know, telling the truth from day one, the people who have been told, my sister, for example, my half sister, who I only found 3 years ago, she has lesbian parents. So she always knew the truth and she has never struggled with anything. You know, she's just, this has just been her story and her reality. And it's so interesting to see that contrast between both of our experiences, because it was quite, you know, it was difficult finding out, at 13. And then because the donor would have been anonymous for me, there was no way for me to kind of even get medical history. Everything, all the records were destroyed. So not only do you then
so to this day, you still don't know Louise?
I found him 4 months ago.
Wow. What did you find out about him?
So a distant-ish but close enough relative popped up on 23andMe. Myself and my new half sister who I found a few years 23 back.
23andMe is what?
It's a DNA data matching site, basically. Yeah, it's very similar to Ancestry. A relative popped up over in Canada, and we were able to kind of figure out the family tree and find him. And yeah, we met him a few months ago for the first time.
What was that like?
a lot of people ask me that, and I always say it's kind of, it's similar to a first sibling meeting, I think, as in it feels like the worst first date of your life, because, you know, even if it goes horrible, you still have to kind of keep in touch with this person. Like, it's, you don't know anything about
them. I shouldn't be laughing, but it's just a great example.
No, it is. It's hilarious. I mean, what else is it? And, we laughed our way through that first meeting. But it is, it's just, you don't know much. You've maybe seen, you know, a few photos of this person. You don't even know what height they are. You know, I mean, this man who is biologically my father, I've never seen him before, and he turns up and he's only a few inches taller than me, just like things like that that you never even think about. It's the most awkward and most not awkward and ridiculous situation you can ever find yourself in, basically.
And have you maintained contact with him?
Like I said, my half sister who has two mums, it's quite funny. I think just because of my nature, you know, I'm a journalist and I've kind of had this reality for a few years, but I didn't know it for the first half of my life. Mm. So there was always this curiosity, which she never had, because she had never grown up with, you know, a family father figure as such. So she was just like, oh, I don't really know how I'd feel. I don't really care. and since we kind of tracked him down, what's been more interesting for me, because, you know, I was raised by my dad. I have a wonderful dad. I've never, ever looked for... never been looking for another father figure. It was really curiosity driven on my side. What has been interesting is just watching the two of them bond, and someone who has gone from, oh, I don't really care who my biological father is, to now, you know, we've got a group WhatsApp, and just seeing their interactions has actually been really special. We found him, like I said, through the DNA site, and I cold called him, actually, and that call was recorded, and it's actually on the podcast. And
did he mind?
It goes on. He was very open, which was incredible. He was very, very caught off guard, as you can imagine. You know, he did this almost 30 years ago, and I don't think it had ever crossed his mind that anyone could pop up. But he was very open. And obviously a bit in shock, but warmed up over the course of around a 30-minute call. And you could tell he was emotional, but then he said, oh, what's your family makeup? He said, you know, did you grow up? And I said, well, you know, I grew up with my mom and my dad, who is wonderful. But I did find a half-sister a few years ago who actually is also from you. And it's the first time on the call you can just hear his voice absolutely crack. And he takes a few seconds to kind of regain his composure. And that to me was just incredible. And I listened back to that moment, and actually for everything, you know, that has happened over the years and the last few months and that kind of crazy search that all kind of fell into our lap so quickly. I think that's been the most moving moment for me, just hearing him break up when he hears her name.
Louise, what's the name of the podcast again?
It's called You Look Like Me.
You look like me. Listen, Louise, we really, really appreciate you getting in touch today and sharing the story with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And listen, thank you, Louise. Louise McLaughlin there. The name of the podcast, You Look Like Me.